Well, good evening. It's great to be able to worship together, to celebrate the Lord's Supper together, to receive from God together. And we're going to pick up on Daniel 3, the reading that we heard earlier and the visuals that you saw as well. But before we get to that, you may well be aware that apparently it takes 21 days to either make or break a habit. That is depending only on the basis that you may also go, though, with the view that actually some would say takes 66 days to make or break a habit. Then again, you might actually read around and you could find that some people say it actually takes 250 days to make or break a habit. And then you could look into it further and you can see that there are the three R's that will enable you to make or break a habit. Or you could consider the six simple rules in terms of making or breaking a habit. I also came across eight easy steps, the habit loop and the habit hook that will all enable you to either make or break a habit. Some would suggest that if you're trying to make or break a habit, trying to do more than one at a time is impossible. You need to have one fixed thing you're trying to do, otherwise it's just not going to work. And if you kind of search online on Google, you go how to form a habit, you get pictures of cakes, you get pictures of cookies, you get endless graphs, you even get a few pictures of Robbie Coltrane, but you get a whole variety of things people are trying to suggest as this is how you can either make or break a habit. I wonder why sometimes we try to, you know, start doing something or stop doing something. Why we may be constantly in the world today, we see people who are trying to either begin something or cease doing something. This evening, we're going to be continuing our series, Sold Out for the King. In the evenings, we're looking at what does it mean to live for the King. And in part, I want us to take that whole challenge of what does it mean to, you know, have a habit, to make a habit, to keep a habit, from a positive point of view. This question of being committed. Or maybe it's a statement. Maybe it's something we say, well, I'm being committed when it comes to being sold out for the King, when it comes to living for Jesus. I'm being committed. Or maybe it's that question of what does it mean to be committed? Is it something that I want to attain to? Is it something I want to seek to achieve? Is it something maybe it's actually beyond me and I'm not really quite sure even if I'm ever going to be able to make it? So is there any point me even trying? So we're considering the story in Daniel 3 this evening, which in many ways is one of those classic Sunday school stories. It's a great visual one. You've got goodies, you've got baddies, you've got a load of fire, which is always fun. You've got this defiance that is almost being taken to the nth degree. And if imagine if you were reading it for the first time, there's this sense of, I'm not quite sure how this is going to end up. It's not one of those plot lines where you're certain of what is going to take place. And if we just recap the story in Daniel 3, King Nebuchadnezzar makes this giant image of gold. It's great, the visual on the screen. 90 feet high is probably something if you translate the specific measurements. Some suggestion here, so you're talking 6.5 double-decker buses high. So it's not just some little kind of, you know, 6-foot thing. This is massive. So he makes this massive image of gold and all are told to bow down to it. All his subjects, all the people beneath him. And these astrologers, it tells us in chapter 3, kind of King Nebuchadnezzar's minions, if you will, they come to him and they tell tales on Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, who are not doing what he has instructed. They're kind of deviating from the plan. And so they're summoned before the king, and he questions them. But not in a kind of, you read it, not in a kind of, you know, so guys, what was going on there sort of thing. He's a bit more straight down the line and blunt with them, you know, kind of saying, didn't you get the memo that when all kind of musical kind of chaos breaks loose, you should hit the deck? What's going on here? And so they, as we see them, we'll unpack it a bit more in a moment, they respond to him rather bluntly, in many ways, aback. And his response is then to throw them into the fiery furnace. In that moment, he then sees a fourth person in the furnace. He calls them out, and they're unscathed, untouched. There isn't a singed hair on their heads. And so King Nebuchadnezzar praises God and basically says, all right, guys, you can continue worshiping your God, because he obviously seems to be someone who has a bit of power here. And yeah, you keep doing what you're doing. And reflecting on this passage, I think there's a whole load of different things that we could consider, a whole load of different angles. There's the whole backstory. And this is God's people who are in exile. When we think about Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Daniel, and the Israelites, we've got King Nebuchadnezzar. We can ask, kind of, who is he? What's his story? What's the kind of the journey that he's been on? Could unpack this whole gold image. You know, what was that about? Where was that coming from? What's some of the, you know, kind of the history maybe as to why such things were created? Look at Nebuchadnezzar in a further state, in the sense of kind of verse 15, when he kind of, you know, refers to himself, well, he's top dog, that he is the bee's knees, the be all and end all, and what kind of led him to that point. Could look at the fact that God delivers Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We could think, well, what's that fourth person walking around in the flames all about? There's various different elements. I want us to consider tonight a few verses in the middle of chapter 3, verses 16 to 18, just over halfway through. And they say, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of God you have set up. It's one of those moments of utter defiance. I'm sure you can think of maybe some images, things maybe you've seen in history, you know, on newspapers, on TV screens, that sort of thing. These moments when people kind of say, enough is enough, and I'm not going to be pushed any further. And we see it, basically they're saying, you know, our God can save us, King Nebuchadnezzar. But even if he doesn't, we're still not going to bow down to your oversized and quite likely overpriced lump of gold. So there. And his response obviously is to throw them into the fiery furnace, thinking, well, you know, I'm not having that, and I'll show you how I deal with people who rebel and don't do what I say. And we have, I believe, in this example of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, almost one of the ultimate examples of what it means to be sold out for the king. Because here we see that, you know, the heat is turned up, pun intended. And they say, you know, even if God doesn't save us, we're still not going to do as you ask. And for them, it was a case that they either needed to bow down or they were going to be thrown in the fire and they were going to burn. There were these two options that were before them in that moment. And it's quite obvious, really. There was this direction or that direction. There was either the dirt with your nose right up against it, or there were the flames licking up around your body and quite likely not ending in a great way. There's no kind of grey area that they can kind of go, well, actually, we're going to go for the third option here. You know, we're going to sit somewhere in the middle. It was A or B. It was this or that. And for us, when we come at this, I think in many ways, if we're looking for a kind of a parallel, I believe it's for us either we can sell out to the world around us, or we can be sold out to our king. The challenge comes, though, is that, yes, we could say there's two options there, but actually they're not quite as black and white as it was for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There's kind of a bit of a fuzzy air bit in the middle. And we kind of say, well, I'm going to sort of do this, but I'm going to kind of bend maybe at this moment. And I'm going to kind of, you know, kind of, well, that's the thing I will commit to. And yes, I will be sold out. But on this area, we'll kind of just bend the rules slightly. We sing that song, Christ is Enough, with the line, the cross before me, the world behind me, no turning back. And as it struck me again as we were singing tonight, I think the words we sing sometimes are so emotive, so powerful, and maybe sometimes we need just to pause and actually just clock what it is we're singing. The cross before me, the world behind me, no turning back. There's another band called Urban Rescue, who we heard the other week, Emma and I, and they've, in one of their songs, they've taken a similar sort of phrase. They go, the cross before me, the world behind me, no turning back. Though none go with me, you're right beside me. It's not just saying kind of, you know, the cross before me, the world behind me, no turning back. But actually, it's also when everyone else maybe deserts and says, I've had enough, I'm still going to stick with you, God. I'm still going to be there for you. I'm still going to be seeking to put one foot in front of the other and live my life for you. I don't know about you, but just having been thinking through that through this week, that's powerful stuff. And it's things that, you know, we need to actually maybe really take hold of what it is that I'm seeking to commit to. For Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were not going to take their eyes off of God. They made that choice, whatever happened. And we see other examples throughout the Bible. Jesus, in Matthew 7:13, he says, enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. Enter through the narrow gate. And it's this imagery that is often used. There's other passages, John 10, where Jesus paints a similar picture of needing to focus ourselves and go, you know, this is the line I'm going to walk that God has set before me. And that doesn't mean it's going to be the easy one. It doesn't mean the one that everyone else is going to take. It's not going to be the thing that the world is going to kind of go, well, yeah, that's fine. But that's the path that I want to put my feet upon, being committed to all that Jesus calls us to. We look in 2 Corinthians 5:7, says, for we live by faith, not by sight. Here Paul, similarly, he's writing to the believers in Corinth, but he's reminding them that they need to keep their eyes fixed on where they're going, even though they may not necessarily know what that's going to look like. That actually they need to stay focused on the one they're seeking to serve. Even though it may get a bit bumpy, even though it may kind of get a bit difficult, a bit dangerous, but keep their eyes focused on him, being committed to all that he calls us to. So asking that question, I suppose, kind of, you know, what does this mean for us? What are some of the, you know, the challenges maybe that we face? I was watching recently a clip from the film, the TV series rather, Running Wild with Bear Grylls. And if you've never seen it, basically he takes celebrities off into the wild, supposedly, and puts them through their paces. Various kind of film stars, TV actors, and he's even done one with Barack Obama, although that was more just a walk, kind of wasn't really much else, but then apparently he wasn't allowed to do much else. But you have these kind of subjects, and you see their varying ability kind of almost depends on the amount that he puts them through. This one clip, though, was of the actor Ben Stiller, and who was really put through his paces. And there's this moment where there's this rope up this vertical kind of rock face that is probably about 60 feet high, and he's having to pull himself up. And you can see that Ben Stiller, this actor, is really struggling. And there's this point about halfway up where he almost kind of gives up. And Bear Grylls is below him, kind of said, well, no, just keep going, sort of thing. And it's one of those clips, it's great to watch, because you go, that must be really tough. And I'm really glad that's not me, because I'd hate to be in that situation. I'd hate to be in that moment, kind of struggling, going, well, the only way is up, and I'm not quite sure how I'm going to get there. But it's here where we need to ask that question, rather than just watch. And rather just think kind of, well, this was a situation some, you know, few thousand years ago, and it was these three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who've got weird kind of names that we can do some interesting kind of rhymes with and that sort of thing. But we actually need to go, okay, what does it mean for me? What does it mean today? What does it mean in my life? And I believe there's various questions that it can raise for us. As a follower of Jesus, who am I committed to? Who is number one in my life? Not just as an airy-fairy kind of question, but actually, when the rubber hits the road, am I sold out? or am I just someone who turns up and kind of enjoys things along the way? But when, you know, kind of life really throws it at me, that's when I just bail on it. Asking that question, how far will we go? How serious are we as believers? We see that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were committed to the nth degree, to the end. They were willing to put it all on the line. And it's asking, yeah, what does it mean for me? What does it mean for you? What does it mean for us? That whole idea, maybe, of saying, well, whatever happens. For them, they were willing to, you know, be thrown into that fire. They said, you know, God can save us, but even if he doesn't, and we know how it ends, so it's kind of easy to look at it and go, well, it all worked out for them in the end. But they wouldn't have known that. And what does it mean for us to be committed and sold out, not just when it's all great and we're gathered maybe on a Sunday, but actually the rest of the week? And when things go wrong, and when we feel let down, and when we're dejected, how are we going, no, I still want to be sold out. I still want to be committed. I don't want to slip. I don't want to let it all kind of run away and just, you know, run, go back to the world. What does it mean to live my life for Jesus? Putting my faith in action. Saying, actually, you know, this is a line and I'm not going to cross it. So when I find myself at work, when I find myself at college, when I find myself with my friends or with my family, actually there are some things that I'm not going to do. Because actually, this is the line. This is what it means to be committed. And whereas we could just kind of go, well, it's a bit of a grey area, actually I'm going to say no. I don't want to go with everyone else. Asking that question, how am I going to demonstrate what this means to me? We're challenging and talking as an eldership earlier this week. This real sense of how we expectant for God to move. And we're going to be looking at having baptismal meetings, saying actually how do we actually celebrate people declaring publicly their faith in Jesus Christ in the waters of baptism, and rather than just going, well, we're going to wait until someone says I want to be baptized, but actually how are we expectant that God is going to be moving, that there are going to be people who we know, part of this community we're connected to, who are going to be giving their lives to Jesus and are going to be coming forward and saying, yeah, I want to be baptized because God is moving in my life. And it's that moment where someone steps up and says, actually, I want to publicly demonstrate what this means to me. Now, maybe you might sit there and go, I get all that, but I'm not quite sure I can deliver, really. My life, you know, I'd love to be committed. I'd love to live out my faith. But I'm not quite sure if I can do it. I read this in my reading daily reading notes today. It referenced, funnily enough, about a film. It says, Charlton Heston was the star of the movie Ben-Hur. And Cecil B. DeMille, producer, wanted Heston to learn how to drive a chariot for the all-important chariot race towards the end of the film. It would lend greater authenticity to the production. Heston was willing to take driving lessons, but learning to have a chariot, drive with a chariot with horses four abreast was no simple matter. I think I can drive the chariot all right, Cecil, said Heston. I'm not at all sure I can actually win the race. DeMille replied with a grin, Heston, you just stay in the race and I'll make sure you win. And he said, goes on to say, and that's what God wants us to do today. You know, to stay committed, to persevere, to not worry about what's going to happen and how we're going to stay the course, but actually to stay committed to what God has called us to do. And I think it also is asking that question, how am I going to really seek to walk in step with Jesus if I'm committed to him? So we talk about the language that we use. How am I actually going to really dig deep and go, no, I want to really commit myself? And actually there are things that I say, that I probably say jokingly, but still there's things that I say that I shouldn't. There's conversations that go on that actually are bringing other people down and I shouldn't be a part of them. Or I should actually be interjecting and saying, you know, is this right? Should we really be talking like this about other people? We think about our actions rather than just saying, well, I'm going to try and be a nice person. But actually, no, I really want to think about the way I live my life, the practical things I do, things that are not honoring God. And I want to say, no, I want to stop these things. I want to start living a life that is glorifying God. I need your help, God, because I have no idea how I'm going to do this. But that's the step I want to take. We think about our thoughts. We kind of go, but they're just not really, no one knows about them. And, well, we can't help it really because our thoughts just come to us and we've got no control. Well, actually, no. I want to be committed. I want to give my life solely over to the King. And actually, God, I need your help with these things. And saying, how am I going to, you know, kind of grow with others? How am I part of a home group? Not just because it's another night of the week that we can fill, and that's what church is all about, just filling our time, but actually so that I can grow with others, so I can share with others, so I can actually say, this is, you know, these are the challenges I'm going through. This is what's happening. Will you pray with me? Will you support me? How am I engaging in prayer? Again, not just because it's something that fills our time, but actually it's something that Jesus taught on, and actually so we can engage together, so we can lift up others, so we can grow together. And all these things we might kind of think, they sound great, but they're just a lot of work. Or aren't we just going to end up getting into a habit about these things? You know, the idea of reading your Bible every day. I was challenged recently, reminded some time ago, personally going through this whole thing of wanting to kind of spend time each day reading the Bible and engaging with God. But I was really concerned that I was just going to do it out of habit. So I didn't do it, which is a bit rubbish, really. Because not only was I was concerned I wasn't going to do it out of habit, but actually I wasn't doing it. And it's this sense of actually, no, well, how am I engaging? How am I willing to go, actually, no, yes, this is a struggle, but I'm gonna start. God, will you help me? We sing songs declaring God's greatness, but yet I wonder whether sometimes we actually recognize that he can help us with these things. Daniel 3:15. Now when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. There were no grey areas for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And there was a choice before them. And as I've been reflecting on this, I'm very conscious there is no physical furnace here tonight. There's no kind of, this is the line, and either you go this way or that way, and that way is not very good. You know, it's not like that for us. But surely if we're seeking to follow Jesus, if that moment when I prayed a prayer, however long ago that was, saying, I want Jesus to be my friend, I want you to forgive me for all the wrong things that I've done, I want you to help me live my life for you, I want you to fill me with your Spirit, if any of that meant anything, then surely we should be seeking to take steps forward. Saying, how can I not just sign up to some club, but actually grow as a follower, grow as a disciple, committed to all that God calls each one of us to? Kenneth Blanchard wrote, there's a difference between interest and commitment. When you're interested in doing something, you do it only when it's convenient. When you're committed to something, you accept no excuses, only results. I don't believe the Bible teaches us, or Jesus calls us, to be interested. I don't think that's what it's about. I don't think that's what he's after. To, you know, when it suits us, we'll engage. When we feel like it, we'll show up. When I'm in the right mood and the right moment, then yes, I'll open my Bible and I'll pray and all that sort of stuff. I believe the Bible teaches. I believe Jesus calls us to be committed to him. For each of us to take hold of, what does that mean practically for us? For me to stand here and go, actually, what does that practically mean for me? Irrelevant of you, all very nice people as you are, but actually for me, Ed Jones, to go as a follower of Jesus, what does it mean for me to be committed? For me to be sold out? And then to seek to take the steps to move forward in it. Again, not because I have the answers and I have the strength and I have the ability, but because of, with God's help, anything is possible. even someone like me, even people like you, being able to be committed, to live our lives and to make a difference for the King. Let's pray. Jesus, I want to thank you for the word that we've considered here this evening. I want to thank you for the power that is within it. And I pray that as you've been speaking to us, I pray the things that you have put on our hearts, the challenge that you've set before us, will not be something that we just bury deep down or just kind of, you know, hold our breath for a while and then just hope it'll go away. For those areas in our lives that you are bringing to the forefront of our minds, the things that we need to grapple with, the things that we need to deal with, I pray that you will give us the strength and the conviction to walk into all that you have called us to, for your glory.
I think we've all got some responding to do. The worship band are going to come up on you. Yeah, you are. And the prayer